Hey folks, thanks for being a member of the Cafe Insider community. In addition to the Cafe Insider podcast and my weekly note, you also get bonus material from my interviews on Stay Tuned with Preet. This is exclusively for you. Hope you enjoy it. What people may not know, Brian, given the seriousness of this conversation and the deeply serious nature of both this film and the last film, is you spent a number of years as what?
Comedian.
A comedian. There's not been a lot of comedy lately in this conversation and in some of the work you've been putting out, Brian. How do you go from being, you know, a nuts and bolts comedian sitting in rooms where people are drinking two drinks as a minimum, making people laugh, writing jokes, to doing this? Is it what I often suspect and what people sometimes theorize about? Are all stand-up comedians actually deathly serious on the inside?
You know, well, first of all, I've never been asked this question. Second of all, my career as a stand-up comedy was an utter failure. However, to answer both of those questions, one of the reasons why I got out of stand-up comedy after trying it for a few years is that I found that most comedians were actually deathly serious and miserable. And that basically, as they went on to stage, that was like their escape to basically vent about everything that they are miserable about in life. And that was what was funny. I mean, just look at Louis C.K., for example. I mean, obviously he got caught up in all the Me Too stuff. But I mean, his entire comedy is about venting about how awful his life is. And that's right. Why it's funny. Or Bill Burr, right? Or so many of the...
Well, I've also never met a comedian, a good comedian who, and I've met, you know, I actually have met some who are lighthearted as they think about
in person.
Life.
Yeah. Well, it was funny, you know, when I was going through that time, people are always like, oh yeah, tell me a joke. And you're always like, oh no. That's just, you know, I'm not really that funny in real life.
you have to fashion comedy, right?
But what happened? And if I may tell this story. So I'd moved out to Los Angeles right after university. I was just trying to make a living, and I got into comedy, stand-up comedy. And at that time, I realized that, you know, I really would prefer to be an actor. And so as I'm trying to pursue stand-up comedy and doing improv classes, I start taking acting classes all over Los Angeles. And I don't know how I'm going to get a break. You know, like, how does anybody get a break? And I think it's a little bit easier now with kind of YouTube and the internet and that kind of sense, so you can kind of make your own path. But at this time, you know, if you didn't have an agent or a manager, right, how are you even going to get to audition for a role, let alone, you know, let alone catch a break? And I didn't go to Juilliard. So I start these showcases here in Los Angeles, and the idea is to bring actors and writers together to basically perform in front of agents, managers, and casting directors. And I put this together basically for myself to be seen, and also try to just pay my bills as I'm trying to make it as an actor and comedian. And I write this 10-minute scene. And the scene I write with this guy, Sam Wolfson, is about a Christian guy that wants to marry a Jewish girl so he'll never have to make another decision. And it went over as crazy because it was, you know, just absurd and based on all these religious and cultural stereotypes. And we turned this scene into a play and we call it Jewtopia.
Yes.
And we opened it in Los Angeles in 2003. A year and a half later, it had become the longest running comedy in LA history. Bring it to New York. Open it off Broadway in a 300-seat theater at the end of 2004. And we play for 3.5 years there. I perform in this show literally like 2,000 times. And so suddenly I'm in this prison of my own making. I've written this show, I'm starring in the show, I've produced the show, and I can't get out of the show because it's paying all my bills. And I eventually leave the show. It plays for another 6 months. I head back to Los Angeles, and I had decided at this time that I wanted to direct. I didn't want to act. I wanted to be the director and the producer because I didn't want to beg somebody for a job. I wanted to be the person creating the job. And we had adapted the play into a screenplay. And I spend the next 4 years of my life cobbling together the money to go make this movie. And I eventually get to make this movie. It's $1.5 million budget. We had John Lovitz in it and Rita Wilson and Peter Stormare and Phil Rosenthal, who created Everybody Loves Raymond, and Jamie Lynn Sigler and Tom Arnold, and a great cast of comedic actors.
Yeah.
And the guy who had financed it decides not to sell it for distribution. They put it straight on to video on demand. It does no business. It gets bad critical reviews. And suddenly, not only am I in director's jail, I'm completely broke. And it's now the beginning of 2013, and I'm 40 years old, and I'm going, what am I going to do with my life? I had spent 10 years on this Jutopia train. I thought I was going to be able to reinvent myself as a director of comedies. This movie has now flopped. I'm without an agent, and I'm literally Airbnb-ing out the apartment that I was renting at the time to pay my bills. And Lance Armstrong confesses, and it's now January of 2013. And I had been cycling.
And you had an aha moment.
Yeah. And I'd been riding my bike my whole life. And as I was going through this, you know, really terrible depression, debating what I was going to do with my life next, how I was going to, you know, manage to continue in the entertainment business, whether or not I was literally going to start something completely different. I get this idea that, you know, they had never actually caught Lance Armstrong. To this day, he never tested positive. And the only way that they had actually caught Lance Armstrong is the guy ultimately confesses when all the evidence is stacked up against him after this whole criminal investigation. And it struck me that regardless of Lance Armstrong cheating, he hadn't been caught. And if you can't catch the most tested athlete on planet Earth, well, who can you catch? So I get this idea that I'm going to go make a documentary and I'll be in control. I'll be the boss. And I'll basically dope myself, ride my bike, and show that essentially that the entire anti-doping system in sport is a fraud, under the premise that if Brian Fogel can basically get through the system after we watch him dope on camera and inject himself with every single banned substance, you know, known to mankind, then clearly the system is a fraud.
I remember finding that wild.
And 3 years later, I'm standing on the stage winning an Academy Award, and it changed my entire path in life, my trajectory in life. And that led me, you know, to then go make The Dissident.
And then come up here on the podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet.
Exactly.
It's a pretty good arc, Brian. I should not only thank you for spending time on the show, but as I mentioned a little while ago, my 15-year-old son's piano lesson is taking place. I don't know if folks will be able to hear it, but in case you are, I should point out that he is playing the third movement of Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven.
I thought that's what I heard. I was going, is that Chopin or Beethoven?
Well, we're taping this a little late because you're on a different coast.
Well,
and usually those kinds of family things don't occur during taping time. But the determination has been made that his piano lesson is far more important than my podcast.
Well, look, and you so have to support
we can
the arts.
Coexist. Of course. He's playing with a lot of gusto, I gotta say. It's a little louder in my ear, so. Thank you again for becoming a Cafe Insider. Listen to the Cafe Insider podcast every Tuesday with Ann Milgram and me, and stay tuned every Thursday.